I'm Jamie, a.k.a. Scumboy, from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper. We call it the Starling Tribune. I'm your chief editor today. My name is SP. And your other award-winning reporters for this episode number 204 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Bebo loves you.
Bebo! And Michelle.
Kicking ass is how we heal.
I wouldn't expect anything else from the legends. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, July 19th, 2018, the first day of San Diego Comic-Con, and we are live via www.geeks.live.
That's right, and this evening we'll be discussing Legends Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Legends Tomorrow, as well as the greater universe, including shows like The Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Vixen, Constantine, and God knows what else they're going to come up with.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Michelle, let's just get right down into it and break down our current episode.
This episode is called Bebo, the God of War. It's Season 3, Episode 9. It aired Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. Directed by Kevin Mock. Credits include an episode of Flash, Three Legends, and One Chuck. Written by Grain Godfrey. Credits include 11 Legends and 6 Flash. And James Egan. Credits include 4 episodes of Legend and was a staff writer on Ash vs. Evil Dead and Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Yeah, it's important. You have to say The Last Airbender. You just can't leave it as Avatar because, well, there's only been one of those. In any event, this episode of Legends of Tomorrow was indeed aired on the first full week of December 2017 to a full slate of DC shows. There was a total of 4 of them that week. On Monday, the 4th of December, Supergirl aired their 9th episode of the 3rd season titled Rain to a total rating of 2.94. I need to say this is live plus 7. So you're including the DVR numbers for all 4 shows. On Tuesday, the 5th of December, Flash aired their 9th episode of the 4th season titled Don't Run to a total viewership over 7 days of 3.67. Following Flash, Legends of Tomorrow aired this episode, Bebo, the God of War, that we're talking about tonight. It was the 9th episode of the 3rd season, total rating of 2.61. So far, it's all 9th episode of the seasons. And Arrow, on Thursday, the 7th of December, is no exception because it was the 9th episode of the 6th season, titled Irreconcilable Differences, which we've already podcasted about, to a total rating of 2.1. 2 million viewers over the 7 days. These ratings, of course, do not include streaming through the CW app. So we assume somewhere between a million or 2 million bump from that. So Chris, what do you think? Coming off of last week and the 4 plus ratings that we had for all 4 episodes of the crossover, what do you think about these ratings?
Well, it's kind of returning to normal. The crossovers are a mega event that brings people out in droves that may be not watching in real time, or maybe just watching on the app, things like that, because crossovers are water cooler talk. You go to work and like, did you see Legends last night? They wrapped up the crossover. What'd you think? And you don't want to be that guy that's like, shut up, I don't want any spoilers, and covering your ears trying to avoid them for the day. So
what do you mean? You tell me that all the time.
Well, now you're showing everyone behind the curtain. That's no fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are a podcast. We're trying to be authentic.
Authentically evil.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, you don't want to be that one guy and you want to watch everything. So the ratings are all above two, so that's great, but they're nowhere near the basically the double digits that they were, 200% of what they are this week. So Michelle, we often start our talk about the actual episode with the overall theme, which we attribute to the title, and I think this week it's very apropos. So what's up with that title?
Well, the Vikings think a toy called a Bebo is a god. And this anachronism starts in Central City, December 24th, 1992. It is the fifth night of Hanukkah, and Martin has to get the hottest toy for Lily, which is a Bebo, which is like our Tickle Me Elmo. Bebo is blue, and you rub the tummy, and Bebo says, "Bebo hungry, Bebo thirsty. I love you," and things like that. Well, of course, there's that long line, and Martin has to get that toy, but they're all out. And then somebody sees one up on the top of the shelf. Now, SP, you are our resident rocket scientist.
Yep.
What did you think of how Martin got the toy to himself?
Oh, it was great. You know, he was using his scientific mind to go ahead and, you know, use the tools or the toys around him, whichever it was, and basically uses a toy arrow to hit a plane that hits a sign and that brings Bebo to him. And then he runs off and then he disappears to some other place, which we eventually find out is Viking America way back in the, I don't know, 1000 AD or something like that. But before we get too far, I just want to say that, yes, indeed, I was one of those parents that was caught in the Tickle Me Elmo craze back in 1996, trying to get one of the toys for my kids. Now, I will tell you that we were not successful, and we had to wait till February to pick up our Tickle Me Elmo. So I was much like Professor Stein, and I was trying to do everything I could to get one. I just wasn't presented with one hanging from the ceiling like he was.
I don't have kids, so I've never had to go through that.
There's always one hot toy every year, and everybody wants it because it's brand new, it's ingenious, and people think it will stimulate their kids' imagination or education or something like that.
But really, it's just there's been tons of commercials, and other kids are getting like, I have to have this Hatchimal or this Tickle Me Elmo or whatever it is. Almost every year, it's something different, unless it's like video game console release year, and then it's whatever the big new video game console is that everyone has to have.
Now, I have a coworker at work. He has three young boys. He's a lot younger than I am. So he's got three young boys, and they're all, quote unquote, on the spectrum, which means they have autism to some extent or another. And he's actually pretty ingenious with his toys. He doesn't go in for the crazes. Matter of fact, a couple of years ago, he gave his kids wooden blocks that he built himself to play with. So I think there's something to be said about the handcrafted toys even today.
Completely agree.
Well, this episode takes place right after the crossover and when Stein passed away. And it's very interesting. Nate points this out and Jax points this out, that here we are, we have this anachronism and we're meeting Stein. Like, they keep meeting versions of themselves, or they keep meeting their family. Like, Roy met his dad, Ray met his younger self and such. And at first, Sarah is like, we're going to take our feelings, we're going to put it in a box, and we're going to lock the box.
Let me get this straight. She wants to put her feelings in a lock box.
Lock box. I'm having flashbacks to 2000.
Strategery. There you go.
You forgot the laugh at the end.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Well, this anachronism, I like how it becomes a 12. Because Gideon's like, look, this is way beyond a 10. And Chris, why does Gideon say this is a 12?
It's all messed up. I mean, it's a level of chaos we have yet to see. I honestly don't remember exactly why.
Because of the future, Christmas doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's Happy Bebo Day.
Bebo Day, and then Happy Odin Day.
Yeah, which I thought was great.
Yeah, we become New Valhalla instead of the United States of America. We're New Valhalla.
I'm kind of okay with that. That'd be kind of badass.
Yeah, I'm from Minnesota, and in Alexandria, Minnesota, they have the runestone there of the actual, the Leif Erikson era Vikings made it all the way to Minnesota, and they left their runestone there, you know, the writing, which you can eventually interpret what's going on. And yeah, that's really a thing. It was carbon dated back to that time. So the Vikings were here first, people.
Exactly. We should be New Valhalla. Anyway, they end up going back home, and that's something else. But Sarah asks for help. And Chris, what do you think of when Sarah actually calls Ava and says, I think we need help?
Well, I think it's a smart call, because as much as she's talking about we need to bury our feelings and stuff like that, she knows she has a distracted team. Ava is proficient in the field. She's smart. She understands these things. Plus, there's also the fact that there's the beginning of sparks between the two. So that helps, too.
I'm fine with that, by the way.
It was a logical call. I mean, they did need the help, because she knows as much as she's talking. She might be able to compartmentalize her feelings. She's a trained assassin. Mick probably can because he's a psychopath. But that doesn't necessarily mean the rest of the crew is able to do that so successfully. And losing the professor is a pretty big loss. It hurts.
It is. But I was referring to sparks between Ava and Sarah. But you're right. It was totally appropriate. I mean, Sarah was acquiescing and said, yeah, you know what? We should probably need some help because of Martin Stein's loss. And then Ava was like, immediately, boom, I'm here. So, you know, like when you have that high school crush and somebody asks for help with their homework or something like that, you're like, I'm right there. So that's what happened there.
What's interesting is that this episode is a conflict between Leif and his sister, Freydis. Freydis wants to stay and conquer, and she's using Bebo to justify all this because Bebo is hungry and she's like thirst for war and all this type of stuff. And then there's this Yuletide party. This is great because Sarah gets Ava to go undercover, and that's when Ava says, you know, I'm not the husband type and such. Sarah actually has a good plan to go undercover.
She has a reasonable plan, but she should have known that with her crew that somebody was going to screw it up.
Yeah, there's alcohol being served. And if we know the legends, anytime there's alcohol or a bar-like environment, it devolves into fisticuffs.
Bar fight!
Yep.
Well, this one's interesting because it's Mick on the search of alcohol because Leo is like, you have a problem, you need to dry out. And he actually reprograms Gideon. I wonder how much sweet talking Leo had to do to Gideon to get her to reprogram the alcohol.
I think Gideon has a lot of respect for Leo. I think that there's a mutual admiration between the two. Leo is very competent and he stayed behind for a reason. I think Gideon understands why he stood back. It was out of respect for Mick and his doppelganger, for the lack of a better term, here on Earth One, as well as he needed, as he said in the episode, he needed to heal himself from his loss of Mick over on Earth X. So I think Gideon understood all that and gave him a lot of leeway because of it.
It's somehow, I think Gideon likes a good prank, and changing the flavor of beer is kind of a good prank.
I could see Amy Pemberton completely pranking all of the cast if she was ever on set.
Well, Mick almost gets burned, and Sarah is like, well, blowing her cover's half the fun, and Leo uses the gun and stuff like that. And at first, the plan kind of works. You know, Mick ends up burning Bebo. So Ava started with Happy Bebo Day. Then she switches to Happy Odin Day, and that expression on Sarah's face.
Look, oh my gosh, we've screwed up even more.
It was a great WTF expression.
But, Chris, who shows up?
None other than Odin, the Lord Allfather of Asgard, a.k.a. Damien Dark with a weird wig.
If Anthony Hopkins ever had to be recast as Odin over in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'd be okay with Damien coming over and doing that.
He's already Dum-Dum Dugan, though.
Psh, little makeup, it'll be fine. To age him a little bit.
Now I'm confused and scared.
There have been characters that have done multiple characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe already.
Peter Quill's mother being one of them.
Yes. But not as prominent. So you might have a point.
Well, let's also bear in mind, spoiler alert, for a movie that's been out for 8 months, Odin's dead. So really.
Well, timey-wimey, is he really dead? He could come back.
Perhaps.
It's a comic book movie.
I think he's dead because it happened in Ragnarok and not in Infinity War. It happened in Ragnarok. So I think what happens in Ragnarok sticks.
Okay, so if Ragnarok is everything that sticks within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Sitwell died not in Ragnarok, but in Civil War. So Sitwell's still alive.
No.
Okay, crossing the streams a little bit here, folks. So let's get back into the DC stuff.
One of my favorite sequences is when Sarah is ready to take the Wave Rider and the team stops her. And SP, what did you think of that whole sequence of them going through plans?
It was good because I thought all of a sudden they were actually going through the plan. And I thought it was a great little comical moment because, you know, Sarah can't just walk in and confront Damian right off the bat. You know, something's going to happen. And yeah, the next snap. Oh, my gosh. I forgot how graphic that was. Yes, it was all CGI, but it was pretty graphic. And I did like how they continued and they just were going through the iterations kind of Ocean's 11 style, basically, until they got to the point where like, yeah, we can't do this unless we're all doing it as a team, because whenever we try to do a one off, it gets screwed up. So we got to do it by a team.
Chris, what did you think of Ava leaving? She called the Time Bureau.
This is before she's grown the spine really to stand up to them at this point in the show. I mean, spoiler, we've already watched all of it as we're going back and doing this. So. And we see in this episode that she kind of gets that spine to stand up. And right now, she's the loyal foot soldier. Remember, she followed a Rip. She was loyal to him until he went a little off the deep end. Now there's a new director. So she's used to following the rules, for lack of a better term, being one of the Time Bureau drones. And hanging out with the legends oftentimes would be enough to make you not want to be drone-like, because they're so random, they're so weird, they do what they want. It doesn't really fit in the neat, refined order that you have with the Time Bureau. So it sort of makes sense that she would leave because that's what she was used to. But I like the fact, and spoiler alert for later in the episode, she has the realization that she can help them and comes back.
And of course, they finally defeat Odin. Did you like what Ray did, SP, when he was Bebo?
I did. And, you know, in typical Legends fashion, they made it kind of screw up because he gets a little bit of cotton near his mouth and stuff like that. But I thought he had his helmet on, so I'm a little confused at that. Anyway, so yeah, he was flying the Bebo around. And that's not a euphemism, people. He was actually inside the Bebo flying it around in his Adam suit as he was miniaturized. And he was acting like he was talking and Bebo was talking in his voice, sort of. I guess there was some sort of interface with the Adam suit. Anyway, yeah, I loved the Bebo flying around and basically saying, yep, we're fine. We're cool here. We don't have to do this anymore. So that was pretty cool. I did like the ultimate demise of Bebo, by the way. I think Mick, who hates puppets, actually...
I hate puppets.
And yeah, the heat gun burned the Bebo up and Bebo was termed to be a fraud.
And then we became the United States of America again. Chucks.
We're back.
And better than ever.
There's two other things that's going on. There's the Leo and Mick thing, which we'll get to. But then there's, of course, the Jax meeting young Stein. And Chris, what did you think about what happened to Jax throughout the episode? His thought process.
I understand what Jax is grappling with because he's lost Martin. They've been psychically linked and the temptation, especially Zari kind of helping him dig into that temptation to find a way to save Martin. Because if we can get him to save himself, then he won't die. We're back to where things need to be. And seeing Jax kind of struggle with doing that, then decide to do it, then become heartbroken again when he realizes, wait, Marty didn't open the note, and the conversation he has with Marty where he basically says, I've seen Back to the Future. I know what this is. And then I did the math. I'll be 67 years old. I'll have lived a good life. There's no reason for me to try and break time to fix this. And to him to encourage Jax to go live his own life, it was a powerful scene. I really enjoyed it.
One thing I have to point out with all of this is that they dialogued line by line in some instances the exact dialogue from Back to the Future when he was trying to give him the envelope and stuff. And they even reference Back to the Future. So if you guys didn't catch that, go look at the transcript for the Back to the Future. Go back and watch this episode and you will see in various, I think, three different conversations, there are exact lines from Back to the Future that are said in this episode.
I think it's a very Martin thing to burn the letter. It made perfect sense that Martin wouldn't keep it, that he wouldn't open it. He knows how important all of this is, and Jax deciding to leave. I was hoping Jax wasn't going to leave. I was actually surprised by it. I was hoping they would find a way to work him in. SP, were you surprised that he left or that he left so soon?
Yeah, I was surprised that Stein left, and I was surprised ultimately that Jax left. I didn't think it was, but I was thinking about it later, and I was thinking that it all kind of made sense, because if you take Stein, and I mentioned this, I believe, last week, if you take Stein out of the equation, you kind of take everybody around him out of the equation. You take Jax out, you take Clarice out, you take Lily out, and you take the grandson out. And I was thinking about that even. I think what this show could do, depending on the actor's availability, is they could pull out the easiest way I can describe it. If you are a Doctor Who fan, remember that big David Tennant episode where they had all of the old companions come back just for that 1 2-hour, two episode special invasion? They could do something similar with Jax and Clarice and Lily actually becoming a little superhero clan clique of their own, and they could actually bring them back into the show to whatever they have morphed into. I don't think that they will be going away from the superhero universe completely. I think in the back of the writer's mind, this is always a possibility. So while having Jax off the show is a tough blow because Martin left, Jax had to leave because they were combined into Firestorm, I think it makes sense. Unless, and here's the one thing that I'm still scratching my head over, Jax was the Wave Rider's mechanic. So what have they done since then? We assumed that Ray would be it, but I haven't seen Ray tinkering with the engines too much. So I don't know.
Maybe Zari might take that role.
I believe it's Zari that probably would. She's the closest analog to Jax when it comes to those skill sets.
Either way, we haven't seen anybody deemed the chief engineer of the Wave Rider yet. So that's spoiler alert, by the way, is we don't have a resolution to that. And that's the one hole that Jax really leaves when he is off the show.
I know SP had mentioned when he thought he was leaving, I thought Jax would be around for a few more episodes before he left. I figured they were kind of building to it instead of, oh, no, he's gone too. And I went, wait, what? I was kind of in whiplash a little bit.
And one of Sarah's final things that she does for him, he's like, I don't want to throw a party. And of course, Sarah, acting as captain, is like, we're getting a party. And I thought that was a great thing for her to do. Even though Jax didn't want it, he needed it. He made a wonderful, touching, you know, toast and about how broken people, broken things can come together and make something that's beautiful and whole and such.
You know, when you think about it, you know, the old Arrow Christmas parties that we used to love to get every season, we've pretty much had those with Legends of Tomorrow. So I think Legends of Tomorrow has taken on that moniker. And I'm so glad that we had that family moment on board the Wave Rider at the holiday time. We call it Christmas time, but it's the holiday time. And everybody's around the table. Family gets together. The one difference, though, with the Wave Rider is that family is an intentional family. And they're all living in the same roof, which, you know, normally families like to part away after a couple of days together. But they're all together, so.
So considering everything that she did, how do we want to rate Sarah as captain for this episode? SP?
She was rebonding her crew. They went through some difficult times. She did elect to sacrifice herself, basically, at one point, not wanting to lose anybody else. She was in a healing mode, but I think she navigated it pretty well. I will give her an 8, and the only reason I won't give her a 9 is because she actually was going to sacrifice herself, and I don't think that was necessary. So yeah, 8, strong 8.
Chris?
I was thinking 8.5. I think she navigated things pretty well. Some little oversights, such as thinking she was going to go charging in on her own to confront Damien, but at least she listened to her crew and didn't go and get her neck snapped. But yeah, 8.5.
Yeah, I would say 8.5 as well. She had a great plan. The one thing that I think was a little reckless that she did was she touched Damien and Nora as they were time warping out, and she ended up in the weird Mollus zone, and she hears the voice and she sees something. And fortunately, Ava had come back in time to reach through the tear and bring Sarah back out. I think that's something that she really didn't go over her team with. I think that was like a last minute thing, but still a little irresponsible.
Well, and then she didn't really realize where she had gone afterwards. And then we, of course, get Constantine coming back, which is awesome. But we get Constantine coming back at the end, and we realize how grave the situation really is. Next episode, we get a lot of that taken care of in terms of explanation, anyway.
Now, Chris, Mick Roy is one of your favorite characters. What did you think of him and Leo throughout this episode?
It was entertaining and also slightly heartbreaking at the same time, because you know Mick's still not fully over the fact that his snart is gone. So now he's got another guy that looks just like the man that was his best friend and partner, but acts completely different, that is here trying to help him grow, trying to make him recover. But there was some good comedy there, and I kind of liked the moment at the end where he tastes his beer, he's like, it's beer again, and they have the moment where he goes, well, I realized I shouldn't try and change you. And you went, okay, these characters are ending on a good foot.
So, SP, is there anything else about the episode you want to talk about?
Actually, yes, and it dovetails great on what Chris just explained. It gets back to Leo's snort. I love Leo's use of the puppet of Martin Stein and trying to give the crew therapy, basically. And just, it was an awful decision, but it made for some hilarious TV, right? Including Mick actually punching the heck out of the puppet because he hates puppets. So that was a good little montage that they put together there. So Leo, definitely, my hat is off to you on using the puppet for therapy.
Chris, any last thoughts?
This was a good way to come back from heartbreak and the crossover. You have moments to address that, but you also have some moments of comedy, and you find a way for them to get a little bit of closure on Martin's passing, even if it's only with dealing with his time-displaced 1992 version. So this is a solid episode.
Yes, this is one of my favorites of the season, and it ends with the appearance of one of my favorite characters, which is Constantine. And Constantine appears in the next episode called Daddy Darkest. It's season 3, episode 10. It originally aired Monday, February 12, 2018. John Constantine pays the legends a visit. They agree to accompany him to a present-day psychiatric hospital and are surprised to discover who Constantine is trying to help. Amaya and Nate once again come face-to-face with Kawasa. It's directed by Dermot Downs and written by Akito Shimizu and Matthew Mala.
And with that, we are going to dive in to the news. Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with award-winning news chief anchor Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
Thank you, SP. Chris, you have a piece of funny news from Stephen Amell?
That's right. Stephen Amell has experienced a first in his 7 years on the set of Arrow. I could read the story description, but it's best just to go directly to the tweet that he posted online where he said, 140 episodes, countless stunt sequences, and I managed to avoid getting kicked in the nuts until today. So it only took him 7 years on set doing stunts, but he finally took one in the family jewels. We're sorry, Stephen.
Let me guess. Haley Atwell actually guest starred on that episode.
No, he would get a broken nose.
Okay. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, when Haley Atwell was Agent Carter on the TV show Agent Carter, she was known to destroy her stunt doubles that she was sparring against. It is serious. It's literal. It's documented. It's out there. So that's why I was saying it.
Next piece of news. There's a lot in this news story. So first, Batwoman series from Greg Berlanti and Development CW. We've learned that Batwoman is going to appear from the crossover. Well, looks like they've got plans, a lot more plans, because she's getting her own series. It's supposed to come about 2019. There's no casting news of yet or anything, but we know that she's appearing and she is staying. Now, the crossover, we are used to all four shows And, you know, we all agreed that this year's crossover is one of the best. Unfortunately, this crossover that introduces Batgirl will only include Arrow, The Flash, and Supergirl. So there's no Legends.
Boo. Boo.
Yeah, boo, boo indeed. That's what I want to talk about is I'm wondering, like, is Batwoman going to be in the Arrow Flash Earth? Or is she going to be on the Supergirl Earth? And obviously we are upset about Legends of Tomorrow and why they couldn't come in. Like, why Supergirl, who's from another dimension, is going to be there, but not our Legend. Chris, you had a very audible boo.
It's because they don't like fun. No, I don't know. I don't understand why we're not doing the crossover with Legends unless it's more of just, it's a matter of logistics. There's a big cast on Legends trying to cross over four shows, especially a big cast here is difficult. We saw it this last crossover where the Legends didn't really appear for the most part until their episode, with the exception of Sarah. So maybe that's what it is, but as someone who has come to realize that Legends is their favorite show out of these superhero shows, I kind of am bummed to see them getting the short shift again. Because remember, they had the shortest season this season and last season out of any of the other shows, too. So it's like it's not getting prioritized as high, and it kind of bums me out. Maybe I'm reading into it way too much.
I don't think you are. I think you're right on point. Now, I think that because they've created such a great expectation over the last few years with the crossover, specifically the crossover in 2017, that they are taking a step back. Yes, Batwoman is coming on, and that is going to be phenomenal for the series. At least that's what they're thinking about right now, right? But there is this expectation of greater greatness, and to leave out the Legends of Tomorrow is not going to bode well for strong audience viewers like the three of us. So I think that's an issue. Also, do we know if they're trying to do a reach over into the Fox Gotham universe with Batwoman, or if this is a brand new Batwoman with the CW DC universe only?
It is a brand new Batwoman.
Okay. So there's not that crossover into Gotham, but I'm with Chris. I think it's production schedules. I think Legends of Tomorrow is going to be off from the other three shows, and whether or not that's good or not, I don't know, but I would hope that they've done it to strengthen the production value of all four shows, including Legends Tomorrow. We'll see as the season progresses. I think I would hope, if I was the runners of the Arrowverse, as we call it, that they would be spending a lot of attention on Arrow right now. And maybe they're just going to let it go for the season. I don't know. It's so hard to say right now because we're a few months away from actually seeing the first episode and seeing how these seasons for all five shows now, six shows, I guess, are going to play out. I'm bitter, and I will continue to be bitter, that Legends of Tomorrow is not part of the crossover.
Yeah, because I don't know about you guys. I would have loved to have seen John Constantine interacting with a lot of the other heroes of this universe. I think there's some potential for great comedy and him talking to Kara Danvers. Because Constantine's he's a lecherous old man at times, and I think he could make for some funny moments as he tries to hit on pretty much everyone he encounters. And then the other thing is, and this is a bit more practical, if you're doing a crossover, everyone's going to get a ratings bump that week except Legends of Tomorrow. So when we go back and look at this episode a year from when it aired, well, not a year, but say about roughly a year from now when we're reviewing it, and we go, well, Arrow pulled a 4.3, but Legends of Tomorrow pulled a 1.8. Why is that? Because everyone was tired after the crossover and didn't care to pick it up. I think it's doing them a disservice. I think it's going to hurt the show in the long run, and I hope it's not something that they can then look at the end of the season and be like, oh, look how bad the Legends ratings are compared to everyone else. Well, it's an artificial low point as compared to the artificial high point they get from the crossover bump. So I hope this doesn't cause Legends of Tomorrow to go away or to get sacrificed on the altar for another show to come and take its place.
I'm wondering, because we know the next season of Legends is going to be magic and weird folk tales and all that type of stuff, I wonder if the Batwoman is very grounded, very street level, and because of that, it might not mix.
Do you think they're bringing the Batwoman series on board to replace Arrow eventually next year?
That was my first thought.
It's going to have to replace something.
So it would make sense to be more Arrow-like, you know, the street thug sort of superhero that Arrow really truly is supposed to be, and Batwoman kind of is too, so I could see that happening.
I thought at first it was coming to replace Arrow, and then when the news came out that Legends of Tomorrow was in the crossover, I went, uh-oh, maybe it's coming to replace Legends of Tomorrow.
That's unfortunate.
And I hope that's not the case, but again, I'm biased. As I've said on this show multiple times, and other podcasts multiple times, my favorite show on the CW superhero stuff right now is Legends of Tomorrow, so I'm completely biased.
If they get rid of Legends of Tomorrow, they lose their plug-and-play show. They lose the show that you can do whatever it is that you want with it because of the time variation of it. It doesn't have to conform to what's going on in Earth 1. It doesn't have to conform to what's going on in the Supergirl dimension either, whatever Earth that is. I forget. We know what Earth that is, right? It's like 46 or something like that.
Something like that. I can't remember. But see, the problem with Legends of Tomorrow, it's the expensive one to do because of all the CG and special effects that go into things, I think.
I would think that it, because of that, actually, it would be the most viewed long term.
I hope so, but I don't know. I'm not optimistic just because I don't want to be disappointed, if that makes sense.
True. And we're talking DC here, so there's been a lot of disappointment.
F Batman. Sorry, I just watched a trailer.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Well, on to general news. Got a bit of news for The Flash. Star Danielle Pennebaker, who plays Caitlin Snow, is going to make her directorial debut in season 5. Said the actress, "I am so humbled by this opportunity to utilize everything that I have learned as a storyteller to bring an episode of The Flash to life. I couldn't be more thrilled to have the chance to work alongside our extremely talented and vast team that works so hard to make each and every episode of the show. I wouldn't be here without the support of my Flash family, and I am so thankful for this opportunity to grow and challenge myself as an artist. And I am so happy about this. Caitlin Snow is one of my favorite. I get upset when she's not on screen enough. And now that Danielle's going to be behind the scenes, that makes me happy as well."
I sure hope that she takes the opportunity to make a statement with her character. And not like a flashy statement or anything, but you're absolutely right. She has been short shifted in terms of plot and screen time. And I hope she takes the opportunity during the episode that she is directing to correct some of those things. And I don't think it's selfish at all. I think it would be doing the character good service by doing it.
Easier said than done, though, because she's the director, not the writers.
Okay, fair enough. Clark Gregg did a similar feat over on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this past season as well, and he did a phenomenal job with his own character. And it wasn't just focused on his character, he just made a couple of subtle adjustments that did his character justice in the midst of everything else that was going on. So I hope she takes that specific opportunity, even if it's only like two or three small things, to adjust her character for the future. And you're right, it's the writers, but I think she will have a certain say on the matter with the executive producers.
Sure. As the director, you have a say in how it's all portrayed and things like that.
Yeah, I look forward to it, and I'm just very happy for her. Chris, you have some Supergirl news.
That's right. Supergirl is going back to the Smallville well again. We know Erica Durant came on. She was on Smallville. They've been plucking other folks from Smallville here and there, like Laura Vandervoot, and I'm sure there's other folks I'm missing. But Smallville alum, and also many other shows like Being Human, the US version, Star Wars, Clone Wars, and Rebels, he's been all sorts of stuff. But Sam Witwer is joining Supergirl in season 4 as Agent Liberty. He starred in Smallville season 8 as Doomsday, and he's joined the CW series to be a series regular as Agent Liberty. In this show's interpretation of the character, Agent Liberty is the ruthless and terrifying founder and figurehead of Children of Liberty, a hate group that supports a human first world order. According to a description from the show's producers, he's a, quote, brilliant orator in the guise of a family man, end quote. And the scariest thing about him is how easily he can convince people that he's right. Given that Supergirl and the DEO tend to be pro-alien immigration, it's definitely fair to assume they will not be getting along with Agent Liberty and his Children of Liberty. I like Sam Witwer. I think he's a very good actor. I've enjoyed him in everything he's done, including his video game appearances as the Secret Apprentice and for Star Wars Forces Unleashed. I'm looking forward to it. He's a guy I like to follow on Twitter. He's always had a positive mindset on things. So good for him getting another opportunity to be on another big TV show. And let's see what he does with it. I'm excited.
For those OG BSG fans that were fans of the reboot, we haven't talked about this yet, but he was a Viper pilot in BSG, the reboot version. He was Crashdown, and he did about 11 episodes or so from 2004 to 2005. So basically the first season. So he does have a lot of geek cred to him. He's phenomenal to watch. I didn't like Being Human, the US version, but his character portrayal had nothing to do with me not liking the show. It just wasn't my cup of tea. And of course, I've loved his voiceovers with Darth Maul with Star Wars Rebels. So yeah, he's going to be a big add to Supergirl.
And he's coming back for the new Clone Wars cartoon that was just announced today at San Diego Comic-Con. So Sam Witwer's going to have a busy 2018-2019.
And I'm happy for him because he's also one of my favorites. In our last bit of news, we've been talking about DC Universe, which is DC's streaming service. It's still set to release sometime this fall. But we do have some more information. First, they're going to do a Stargirl TV episode. Remember, Stargirl was on last season of Legends. It's not going to be her, unfortunately. It's going to be a new interpretation of the character, but still Stargirl. Also going to join Titans. The Titans trailer was released today. I was very surprised by it because it's darker than I thought, and there were some words in there I did not think was going to be said, but it was. Other shows include Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing. There's animated content, that's the adult-aimed Harley Quinn, and the fan-favorite Young Justice cartoon, Outsiders. We've learned money. You can get an annual subscription to DC Universe for $74.99, or you can pay the monthly fee of $7.99. So basically $75 for the year, $8 a month, which is basically the low Hulu and the low Netflix amounts. I should know that because it's where, if I ever do an $8 thing, that's where it goes. SP, what do you think about this news?
All right. This is what we've asked for as geeks, right? As geeks 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were like, we don't want to pay these exorbitant cable prices for shows and channels we don't watch. We don't watch the Golf Channel. We don't watch the Weather Channel. I mean, I do, but other people don't. We don't watch ESPN. So why do we have to pay for it? And those channels, by the way, Golf Channel and ESPN, they were very expensive channels to actually pay with the streaming or with the cable service. Now we have streaming services and we have them left, right, and backwards. We have Amazon Prime, we have Hulu, we have Netflix. Those are the main three, but then we have everything else, including HBO, CBS All Access, Disney, and now this. I'm not going to pay for them. I'm not going to pay for them all. I'm going to pay for some main ones, and that's going to be it. And this is not one of them. The Disney streaming service right now is not one of them, and CBS All Access is not one of them. So what does this mean for me as a geek? It means that I give up my option to view Star Trek. I am giving up the option to view the new Marvel series over on the Disney streaming channel, including everything else like Star Wars, which I assume will be streaming over there. And I'm going to be giving up some DC stuff as well. Out of the three, I think DC is probably the least of my worries right now and probably on par with CBS. The rest of them might eventually hurt me, but I'm not worried about this. Yeah, I won't get it, but there's so much other content for me to watch right now that it's not a big deal.
Chris?
So I think I said it in one of our group chats, and this is the one that once a year I'll pick up for my $7.99 for a month. I'll binge watch the stuff I really want to watch, and then I'll cancel it again. But I'll tell you what, I don't think the Titans show is something I'm going to be watching. I tried to go in with an open mind. I've seen better fan films on YouTube, I think, than what I saw in that trailer. And yes, that sounds overly harsh. It's a first look. Maybe it'll be better. I really want to like it because it's got Dick Grayson in it, who I assume is going to transition to Nightwing. It didn't do much for me. What has me most excited on this one, and I've been an evangelist for this show for ages, is the next season of Young Justice, which had two seasons on Cartoon Network, got canceled because the toys didn't sell because there were barely any toys, then went to Netflix, and people binged it and marathoned it enough on Netflix that Warner Brothers went, holy crap, there's a lot of people that still want to watch this, so then they went and put it on their streaming service, which kind of frustrates me, but I love that show, so at some point, I'm going to pick this service up for a month, and I'm going to binge watch Young Justice, because it's great. If you haven't watched it yourself, go and watch it. You'll really enjoy it. Just, there's nothing else there that really makes me want to see it. It's cool they're bundling, like, digital comics and stuff in there, but I can barely keep up with the stuff I'm reading now, let alone adding in a big back catalog. And most of the other shows they're talking about on there, I just kind of go, I don't care. It's Young Justice or bust for me.
So I have something I want to bounce off you guys. I think with all these streaming services, not all of them are going to make it, but I don't think a lot of the cable channels are going to make it either. And I think if you had to speculate, let me ask you this. If you had to speculate which cable channels that exist right now, not the main broadcast channels, but the cable channels, which do you think are not going to exist in 5 to 10 years? Chris, do you have any to open up with?
Of the streaming services?
No, channels, cable channels.
Oh, it really just depends on how subscription numbers go. You're talking like the stuff in the periphery might fade away, but you're going to have your Cartoon Networks. You'll have most of your sports stuff. A few of those things will fold. I think you're going to start getting into the stuff without the big viewer bases. And honestly, I don't watch enough cable TV to really know what those would be.
I've got a big one in my mind, but Michelle, what do you think? Are there any that stick out in your mind that just not are going to not exist in 5 to 10 years?
I'm thinking that Fox needs to get rid of FXX and just go back to just FX and it's Fox. Maybe things, well, HGTV will stick around, things like that, and the Food Network, that will be there.
Yeah, because those are low-cost productions, really.
Yeah, I think Freeform will stick around because that has ABC's backing.
But they did just lose all of their Harry Potter stuff that they used to bank on playing about 6,000 times a year.
It's funny that you mention Harry Potter because that goes to the crux of the channel that I'm thinking. Sci-fi, Skiffy, will not exist in 5 to 10 years. There's no way in the format that it is now. There's no way that that is going to be able to compete with the likes of Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, everybody else that's genning out content, which they should be genning out. They simply cannot compete. I think The Expanse is indicative of what's going on with that network right now. You've got The Expanse, you've got 12 Monkeys. 12 Monkeys was a lower cost production, but it was a very well done series. We haven't talked about it on this show yet, but I watched the end of 12 Monkeys. It is an SP approved series. I've watched the whole thing. So go ahead. And if you haven't had a chance to watch it, go ahead and watch it. But it's gone. And it's not anymore. There's nothing left on the sci-fi network, Skiffy network, that I would want to watch. And that includes Krypton. I mean, like, who cares? I don't care. I've got other things to watch. So I think Skiffy's going to go by the wayside somewhere between 5 and 10 years from now or sooner. Depends on the financials.
I think it's one of those things that, you know, Amazon has millions of people. They can just stick whatever commercial for their stuff that they want to. If somebody is going to go buy dish soap or whatever, they can put whatever banner they want. Part of cable, there is so much stuff, and you can only spread the peanut butter so far on the big loaf of bread. Eventually, you're going to run out of peanut butter because there's so much bread. And I think that's part of the problem. It's just gotten so big. A bubble's got to burst. Either it's cable's got to rethink what they're doing, or the streaming services have to rethink what they're doing. But one of these systems is going to fail.
Or a combination of everything as well. So we'll see. I just am looking forward to what things are going to change into. In the meantime, I'm not going to buy a one-off subscription to any of this stuff because I've just got too much other things to watch with what I already have. So I'm just not going to make that jump. Other people might make that jump before me because if I'm a college student, and I've never had a cable subscription. I will never have a cable subscription. I will have these one-off subscriptions and just pay for one channel at a time because that is the mode of consumption that I'm in. You do give up live sports, although that's going away. You give up some weather reporting.
Oh, but kids don't care about that. That's on their cell phone. Just pull out your cell phone and be like, okay, whatever your digital assistant is, what's the weather today?
Well, they'll care eventually when they get older and do things like buy sailboats and have to go in the ocean. However, with that said, there's so many internet capabilities to get the weather forecast now to actual like wind forecast, tidal forecast, that sort of thing. And you name your profession. If you're a farmer, if you know, whatever, you're going to get better data over the internet than you are through the Weather Channel. So,
right. One last thing, going back to all these services, we've reached that point now where you can't watch all of the content that's out there. Like, I want to watch all these comic book shows. Haven't had a chance to start Cloak and Dagger. I'm behind on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's so much stuff and there's so many different services out there that we've just hit the point where I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to stick to what I've got on Netflix. Like, I know I got a bunch of stuff I want to watch there. Netflix is like out HBOing HBO now, for lack of a better term, when it comes to quality content and things like that. So it's tough for these new services to pop me, hey, come watch us. We've got all this stuff. And me to go, hey, I don't have time to watch the stuff I have now, let alone what you've got, without turning something else off for a little bit. So it's going to be an interesting juggling act, and it'll be interesting to see who the main subscribers are, especially on the DC one, because I'm curious how the digital comics come into play to get people interested in signing up. Because what are they saying, like 2,000 to 3,000 rotating digital comics that you'll have access to out of the backlog? That could be cool.
Yeah, and just, I don't know how much staying power that's going to have without actual physical copies, but that's just me thinking long term. I don't know.
You got to think like a millennial. They don't want the physical copies. They can put it on their tablet and they can read it whenever they want then and not have to carry it around.
Well, true, but there's something to be said about going into a comic book store and be able to peruse the stacks and see what you like and see what you don't like. Yeah, I know you can do that digitally, but it's a lot harder. You can't just scan an entire wall.
Fair.
Well, I'm sure we're not going to be the only ones talking about this topic, especially since we are part of a large podcast network. Chris, what's a podcast that we have on the network?
So, Michelle, we've got over 25 shows in the network. We can't run down each and every show when we do a podcast to all of our live listeners. But what we can do is point you in the direction of one other show each week and say, hey, you guys might want to check this one out. And this time, we're going all the way to the other side of the world. We're going to Game Life Balance Australia, not the US edition, for episode 63, entitled The Department of Rolling Logs. This week, the lads discuss the Atari 2600 classic, Pitfall. Does the game still hold up in 2018? The lads give their worthless opinions on this important question. Also in this episode, we discover that Rob looks like Obi-Wan Kenobi from the Clone Wars animated series, and AC looks like Severus Snape with a beard? Plus, Rob has been playing more PUBG, AC has been playing Lisa Dragoon, and literally nobody is playing Alex Kidd. It's podcast-erific, and I am supposed to point out, according to these notes, that podcast-erific has 5 exclamation points at the end of it. They called me out specifically to say that when reading this, you must explain there are 5 exclamation points at the end. So, Rob and AC, I did my part. I let everyone know it's podcast-erific. I've done my part.
Gonna Geek is truly an international network now with a couple of shows from Australia and, of course, the Canadian partners that we have. And we're looking forward to more. So, if you are within the United States or outside of the United States, go ahead and apply. And you have a podcast, go ahead and apply to be part of the network at gunnageek.com/join. And we didn't have a chance to promote it. It's already happened just a few hours ago as we record this, but Gunna Geek was actually represented at San Diego Comic-Con with Dave Dawson from the Intellectuals podcast. He actually was on a panel at San Diego Comic-Con on podcasting. So we will tune in to the Intellectuals, basically, to find out how that went.
Thank you so much for everyone that joined us today in the live stream over on Geeks.live, or if you're catching the replay on YouTube.com/GunnaGeek, or even the audio replay available on StarlingTribune.com.
If you have an Amazon device, like an Echo, a Dot, a Show, something like that, you can enable our podcast as a skill by saying the activation word, whatever you've chosen for that, enable Starling Tribune, and you will have your very own Starling Tribune skill on your Amazon device. And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live now at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursday. So every week on Thursdays, we'll be recording now.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter. And you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, that brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Back to the Future Fail.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Viking Fisticuffs.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Bebo Want Cuddle. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.